Welcome to Power of the Tribe podcast. I'm your host, John Connors. I'm the founder and head instructor of Connors Martial Arts in Norwood, Mass. We teach Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai, kickboxing, and mixed martial arts. Give us a call and we will help you find your inner badass. And I'm here with my badass co-host, Dan Robin. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing pretty good.
I think I'm going to stop saying badass. I don't know.
Yeah.
Sounds a little dopey, right?
That is right. Used to, that's why people start jiu-jitsu, right? They want to be a badass.
Tim, we're putting a spring-loaded floor in the academy. It's getting finished today, installed today.
You say spring-loaded. Does that mean people can, when they hit the floor, they'll bounce?
They'll bounce.
Really?
It'll be like,
a trampoline.
Crouching tiger, hidden dragon, where they fly around the room.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. I've been waiting for something like that.
I had a, Rory and I, and who else helped us? John Burke helped us, Paul Prodhosky. We had a lot of help, but we had a glue... Over 1,600 of these styrofoam. Yeah, it was 33 per sheet, and there was 50 sheets. Yeah, so it's 1,650 little styrofoam
blocks. You start skimping by, like, after a few of them. I think I could see putting 33 on them by the second one being like, yeah, 15 would be fine, and then maybe just one in each corner.
What was really funny is we were gluing them on. Maria helped us, too. She was there. And then she goes, so where do the springs go? And I said, no, the styrofoam cubes are the springs. She was disappointed. She was like, oh, there's no actual springs.
What a real bounce. So what's going to be the ultimate effect of these styrofoam?
What's going to be the effect, Dan, is we have a frame around the whole matted area. The mats are going to be sort of pressed in there, so they're going to be drum tight, so they never move at all. And then you're going to have a little bit of bounce underneath, so it's going to be much safer. Better experience for all. It's going to be cool.
Sounds good.
Nice and neat. It'll be great. How's everything with you? Did you earn any patches this week or anything?
No patches. It's a no patch week. It's the opposite. I was going to say, you know, you often ask like the rating. And I was like, you know.
I asked for a numerical
1 to 10 rating, how my life is going.
And I thought I had you hemmed in last week.
But here's the thing. I was thinking you can divide it up.
Okay.
So I was like, I reached a point in jiu-jitsu this week on, I'd say Tuesday, where like the pit of despair, and I don't want to spend too much time on it if no one else has this, but it's valuable if there is someone that has this.
Like, you were in the pit of
the pit of despair.
Jiu-jitsu despair.
Just descended up, the darkness came upon me. You've been there? I'm shocked that you've been there. Where I'm like, I can barely function in this classroom. Like I was like,
I suck at this.
Every role... The message to me was I would just get more and more down. I remember there's a point like you were giving me advice and I was like, I can barely, it almost sounds like Charlie Brown's parents talking to me. Like what you should do is, and I'm like, I can't hear you. All I hear is that I suck. I'm like trying to nod. And I'm like, you're saying valuable things, but all my brain is hearing is like, what difference does it make what he's saying? Because you suck. Is like what my brain is saying.
Got it.
So I could go with, and then you can, it applies to
all
levels.
I think I vaguely remember that moment, actually.
You know, I had that
look on your face, and I'm like, he's really not listening.
But I was trying. That was the thing. I'm like, I don't want to make it sound like I'm like, I suck so bad, I don't care what you're saying. It was like, no, I'm like, I should listen. I can't hear, though. I can't hear anything. All I hear is like a buzz. So, and then this week, it got worse. Like the absolute bottomed out on Tuesday, where I was like, so I could roll with a black belt, right? And I could get totally depressed by those rolls because I'd just be like someone really good like Javi. But I'd feel like, my God, he's just toying with me like I'm nothing, like I'm a white belt. Like, he shouldn't be toying with me like this. You know what I mean?
He's a cat and you're a piece of lint.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, this is ridiculous. At least I shouldn't be. And then another black belt, Jesse Gutierrez, who I'm like, he tapped me probably 3 times in one roll with the same, you know, just all, it's all... guillotines and
Darce choke
and that Peruvian necktie, and I'm like, you know, he just jumps on him, and I'm like,
that's kind of a humiliating one too. The Peruvian necktie sits on your head.
I'm sort of like, I know kind of how I want to get out of it, so I'm like, let me move and let him try it because I'm going to stop his leg, and I just didn't stop his leg. Like he just like I reached for his leg and just went over my hand, and it's gone, and I'm like. Okay, like tapping again, and I'm like, I just suck. And then you can go with blue belts, you know, and then be like, it's a different kind of suck. It's like I should, you know, they're not, you know, toying with me, but I should be doing better. You can go with a white belt and even
there's
maybe
some good blue belts in there.
Yeah, but you can even maybe be getting the better of someone and still come out like I suck. Like, dude, I mean, like I suck that.
Well,
role.
Once you
like,
get those,
well, I should have gotten more the better.
Once
of them.
You put on those suck glasses, everything starts
well, for
to
me,
look sucky,
yeah.
right?
Well,
yeah.
That's what happened. It becomes a spiral because then it's very hard to roll. You know, someone else is like, you want to roll? And I'm like, not really. Like, all right. You know, I'm like, I'm here. I have to keep rolling. And like, just like mopily walking over to someone. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, like
maybe
walking.
You, maybe
like,
you've invented something. Instead of a flow roll, you do a mope roll.
I know. It's like my shoulders down, my head down, like, let's go. And I had a total mope roll with Pat, you know, like a. Krav Maga Pat, that guy, like the self-defense Pat.
Pat Lynch.
Yeah, Pat Lynch. And he's yeah. just like got top control and he's got my
he's
arm.
A bruiser,
and yeah,
man. He's
and I'm
good.
Just, and imagine being in that situation in during like a
you mope. Don't want to go in with a mope against
a mope,
Pat.
Yeah, exactly. I'm in a
he's
mope.
He's going to wrist lock you, yeah, twist your head off.
Yeah, he's twisting my wrist and he's on top of me and I can't get and I'm just like, what am I doing down here? I was like in the worst, like this bleak black pit of despair. That was like overwhelming. Like, I know there's people that don't ever get there. Like they just have fun and they just like it. And they, but I was like, man, I'm in the
hey,
absolute.
But you bottomed out.
Yeah,
that was too, so.
Well,
you're
no,
on
I had
the way up?
I hadn't quite. I bottomed out right afterward. Like so, I'd hurt my knee a little bit. But you know how most of us are, like you don't really feel injuries so
oh, yeah.
much. Like you just. And then I went to a Red Sox game. Like my knee when I got home, hurt, but not so much to concern me.
Yep.
And I went to a Red Sox game and it got worse and worse. And I was
you went
like,
Tuesday night?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm like, what is wrong with my knee? And I wouldn't say the pain got that bad, but my knee just wasn't working. Like, I don't know if this ever happened. I was like, my knee is not stable. Like, I
oh,
was
right.
like, I haven't really, I'm not like a knee problem guy.
Right.
So I'm not, I was like, I can't walk on it. You know, I reached like, I was trying to, like, I couldn't put my left knee was one that hurt. I couldn't step up. On that knee, like I had to like
going
go
upstairs,
like right leg first, and I was going
like Quasimodo.
Yeah, like it was terrible. Like so, there's ramps. I literally was like, I could fall. I'm like going down this ramp,
you're
like
a 100-year-old
you know
man.
I mean? Yeah, I was like, I don't know. Well, but I couldn't hold on to the railing because at all times I had two beers. And like any time, you see what I mean? Like, so
yeah.
I have two beers, and I'm like, I could actually like I don't know that my. My knee felt
could fall
like,
down and spill that beer.
Yeah, well, maybe I wouldn't spill the beer, but I could fall. I was like, yeah, I got a taste of being an old man. I was like, say a fire breaks out, I'm going to be like, save the children. Like I couldn't, because you know how like being, if you're physically able, you're, I think all of
somebody's going to grab you by the arm and help you out.
But you sort of have some feeling that like in an emergency, like a fire in a theater, you're like, I know I'm getting out of here.
Oh, right.
You know what I mean? Like as a physically capable, you're like, I'm going over these chairs. I'm going over. I'm plowing through. I'm getting.
What do you think know, about can't... that, Dan? That, you know, God willing, someday you will be very elderly and possibly infirmed and just creeping along. That's going to be a lousy feeling.
It's
going to
suck. I got a taste of it at the Red Sox game. We were
and
like,
some young kid could come up to you and say,
yeah.
Hey, old man, just give you a hard time.
I thought about that at the game. Like, if someone bothers me here, I'm going to be like, you leave me alone. Like, you know, that's all I could do. Because I could.
If somebody says, stop turning your head.
Yeah.
I'd you're going to have to stop turning your head?
Exactly.
You're not going to be able to talk to
like,
your wife or whoever.
Sorry for turning my head. Yeah. Like, I thought of that. Like, you're incapable. Like, you're like, I
you
got to
get a concealed carry, I think.
Yeah. That might
as we get older, we got to arm ourselves, Dan, as we get older.
That might be the only way out of it because I sort of. That's what I was feeling. I was like, I can't run. I can't defend myself.
It's a lousy feeling.
Yeah, and it might be coming.
Yeah.
You know, so my knees.
You're like
healing.
Superman under the influence of kryptonite. You're
yeah.
Just
but,
like, yeah.
Yeah. That was the bottom out, though. I'm like, I'm in the pit.
How's your knee now?
It's getting better.
Okay.
It's I feel it, but it's recovering. Yeah. But I'm like, now my knee goes right as I'm in the pit of despair. Because, you know, my history, too. I have this. I get the urge to go on walkabout, like from, do you know what I mean? Like Crocodile Dundee. Where it's like, I just feel the need to go on walkabout through the outback and I'll be gone for 6 months. If you remember.
If you get a bad knee, then you're not going to be able to do that.
Yeah, no. I'm saying I get the urge when I get in the pit of despair for jujitsu to just go on walkabout.
Go walkabout from jujitsu.
From jujitsu, yeah. Exactly.
Just like, we won't see you for 6 months.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, remember the end of Crocodile Dundee.
You come back with a really good tan.
It's like, Mick is going on walkabout. And she's like, oh, no, I have to stop him because he's going to go on walkabout into the outback. And she has to chase him down. And like, and it's like he gets the draw. And like, I start feeling it. Like, when I'm in the pit of despair, I'm like, I get the feel like, should I go on walkabout? Just like, walk out of here. And then just be like in the outback. Later.
Yeah.
In the figurative outback for 6 months and then like
the jiu-jitsu outback.
Yeah. So I'm trying to recover.
So is that that feeling gone, the walkabout feeling?
And not totally gone, but I'm trying to, you know, my knees, I need my knee to heal and then just sort of ease my way back in. And I think the way to avoid walkabout, maybe this is actually a topic worth talking about for, is like maybe the thing for me, I'm thinking, isn't to just be like 5 days a week of jiu-jitsu, be like, until I get the urge, until I'm out of the pit of despair, like once a week, twice a week, like just kind of keep at the gym a little bit just until the feeling passes. And then I feel more inspired.
So you're still a little bit in the pit?
Yeah, I'm a little in the pit.
Yeah.
Because I've been in for about a couple weeks, so it takes a while to ease off. So the thing is, I'd like to get out of the pit before going on walkabout.
Oh.
You see what I mean? Yep. Like, try to get out of the pit of despair before I... Because one solution is to go on walkabout, to just be like, I'm out. You know, like...
You're out.
I can't... I don't like it here.
Right.
I want to start following some guru
or something.
Yeah, I want to break. But I'm trying to...
Join a religion or something, you'd just be gone, right?
Yeah. So, I don't know. You know, when the pit of despair descends... You're saying you've had a version of the blackness coming down on you?
Oh, yeah. Always.
The darkness is just starts creeping into my vision, and I'm like,
right. And you feel like, what's the use?
What am I even doing here?
Yeah, exactly.
Someone's on me.
I'm terrible.
Yeah.
Yep. I feel that for sure. Definitely in the pit sometimes. All right.
So you're saying you feel it without even being terrible? Like,
I think it's very subjective. You feel terrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so subjective.
I'm like, I slide.
You can come up with that, conjure that up. No matter
what happens, I think I have objectively bad rolls or days where I'm like, the way I put it is, I'm like, I slid right back to white belt. I'm right back to everything's gone. I have no jiu-jitsu. But then once it's in my head, it doesn't matter what happens. Like, there's certain rolls, it'll be like, you had a pretty good roll against that one guy. And I'll be like, I don't know. Like, those are vanished. Like, the good rolls, I'll be like, I don't know. Maybe.
You just rationalize them away.
Yeah. I'll be like, yeah, he wasn't even really trying.
And, yeah. He sucks worse than me.
Yeah, or like, oh, well, I should have. He's a white belt. And, you know, like, so, yeah. Or I thought of it this way. Like, some of my roles where I was like, I sucked every single role. I'm like, was it that different than 2 weeks ago? Like, 2 weeks, you know, 2 weeks ago, you thought you were fine. But, like, you kind of sucked 2 weeks ago, too. Like, you know,
Wait, it's all how
you sort of see it as, like.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? Because you can. Be like, well, I think I had a pretty good roll against that blue belt, and that can be a positive thing.
Right.
Or it could be like, well, you're supposed to.
Wait a minute. He got his blue belt in Taekwondo.
Yeah.
He's been training here for 2 days.
He wasn't trying that hard, and you know, like all this kind of stuff. You can
torture yourself.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. So well,
I torture myself miserably.
I feel bad about that. That's too bad. Is there other areas of your life that are brighter?
You started this
by compartmentalizing your score.
So I was saying...
So pit of despair there.
Pit of despair. Like 2 out of 10 and for my jiu-jitsu.
2? Oh, good.
For my
I thought you were going to say 0 or 1, but I'll take a 2.
For jiu-jitsu life.
Yeah.
And then... but then I was happy. I had my... You know, we talked a little bit. Like my doctor... My annual doctor's appointment.
He's alive.
And he does like hundreds of tests. And so what they... I think... I don't know if everyone's doctored. I don't hear this happening to anyone else. But for me, he does 100 tests, and then every physical, once a year, there's like 1 or 2. He goes, well, I saw something I didn't like on your heartbeat or something. And I'm like, my heartbeat?
That's kind of like important, doctor.
That's terrible. Like, what's this? Like, what do you mean? Like, it comes out of the blue. You know what I mean? I'm like, I don't have any heart issues. I'm like, what do you mean? And what I found is they just always retest, and then it's better. I think I told you a while ago, like,
that
blood pressure
gives you a lot of confidence in the testing.
I know.
Doesn't it?
They're like, well, we did an EKG and there's something with your heart. I'm like, with my heart? Holy crap. So they're like, let's wire you back up. And then they're like, yeah, it's fine. Hmm. You know, like, yeah, that it does that.
So why would they stop there? Now they get 2 readings. Like, as long as we get one good reading, we're going to just drop you. Wouldn't you test it a third time? How many times are you going to test?
I think they don't really believe the bad. Maybe if I was, you know, 80 years old.
They believe the good one, though.
But they're like, I think they probably have enough experience that they're like, yeah, these bad readings are crap. They happen all the time. Like, if the tape comes a little loose on the diode. Then
if you burp or something in the middle of it. Yeah.
But my blood pressure every year, they go like, it's a little. I think I told you that. My blood pressure hadn't changed since college into my 40s. And then one year they're like...
But didn't you say you get a little anxiety sometimes?
Well, now, because that one year they're like, the nurse does my blood pressure. And goes, huh. I'm like, what do you mean, huh?
Huh.
And then she goes, didn't I tell you this? She goes, are you in a lot of pain right now? And I'm sitting there just like I'm sitting in this chair. I'm like, no. That can't be good. Why are you asking me that? You know, like, that can't be a good sign. My blood pressure reading looks like I'm in a lot of pain right now.
That's so funny.
And I'm like, no, I'm fine. She's like, ugh. You know, she like raised her eyebrows. She's like, oh, you're.
She's grunting a lot. Yeah, she's not actually articulating herself. Just
like... I'm like, no, I feel fine. She's like, what the hell is this? Right, so, like, what? So then she's like, and now your heart rate's going up. I'm like, well, yeah, it's going up. You know what I mean?
This could be really bad.
Yeah, so they're always
It just went up again.
Yeah, so they're always, and then, but that's the thing. Then they're like, they wait 10 minutes and they do the blood. They're like, let's do the blood pressure on the right arm. And then they're like, oh yeah, now it seems fine. So I'm like, what is this crap? So they terrorize me every year. And then they go, cholesterol is another easy one. They go, it's a little, we're not happy with it. It's not that bad. Like, you don't need to be on medication, but we're not happy.
I'm not buying it.
And I'm like, yeah, you say, now I'm getting to a point where I'm like, you say this every year and it never changes and it's always, you know, so they always terrorize me. And this year I got through is what I'm saying. I mean, I passed.
You passed.
It was like, they didn't have to do any follow up, terrorize me, no retesting. They're like, yeah, everything's fine. So I'll take it. You know, they're like, blood pressure a little high, cholesterol a little high. But I'm
do they ever discuss your BMI?
They do not. That with it. That's a ridiculous measurement.
It's so ridiculous.
Right? It's
yeah.
That's your height and your weight or something like that, right?
Yeah.
It's madness.
Yeah.
I think everyone knows that now, though. I think doctors around here will know. It's like the schools will still measure it, but I think doctors know it's a silly measurement.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I also look around and I'm like, people my age, I'm like, if I'm getting.
You're pretty fit for your age.
Yeah, I'm like, if they're raising their eyebrows at my blood pressure and cholesterol, I'm like, is it everybody being told this? Or I don't know, actually.
I would think the majority of people are overweight and probably have high blood pressure.
So do they go to these meetings and do they hear these same things? Or do the doctors say, forget it, like for them?
No, they probably try to give them medication. And,
or maybe they're
they load them up with everything.
Or they're on medication.
Cholesterol, blood pressure medicine, I think that's pretty standard.
Yeah.
I bet there's a lot of people over 50 on those drugs.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't want to talk too much about health because I also notice, like, as you get older, it becomes like everyone talking about health all the time. And I, like, don't want to go down that road.
Please, don't.
I see it with my parents. I think I have bad genetics for, like, over-talking about health. Like, I see it in my...
You have a genetic predisposition.
And my kids are in even worse shape because it's on both sides. Like, my wife's side and my side... A bad not bad health genetics, but bad talking about your health genetics. Yeah, like they way overshare. Wait, like I'd be in high school and it'd be like, your great aunt is in the hospital, and I'd be like, oh, that's too bad. What's going on? It'd be like, issue with her anus, and I'd be like, Jesus Christ! Like, wait, hold on. I'd just be like, no,
stop.
Like, wait, okay, yeah,
I'm out.
I'm out. They're like, well, yeah, there's like a cleft. I'd be like, stop. I'm out. I don't want to hear. And then I'd get like yelled at. I'd be like, oh, you don't care about your aunt? Or, you know, I'd be like, no, I just don't need to.
I don't care about her cleft anus.
I don't need to hear details about any of it. How does it help anybody for me to hear?
So like you're going to weigh in on it with some informed opinion or something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's oversharing. Like, or when I was a young man, I met my wife's grandparents.
Okay.
And they were just like, I was a young guy. And he'd be like, yeah, well, your grandmother. Issue with her uterus, you know, and I'd be like, okay, I don't, you know, well, good, I hope, best wish, you know, hope for the best for her, and be like, yeah, apparently there's a sort of a, and I'd be like, could we stop, please? I wish her the best, I have all the sympathy in the world, but I don't want to hear it. Yeah. So anyway, I don't want
to, all this aside,
I don't want to overshare or talk too much about health.
So, 2 in jiu-jitsu world.
But, yeah.
Strong score in health without going into your medical issues too much, which there really are none. What score are you giving yourself in that?
See, I think averaging those two, you got to way overweight my health.
Yeah, you should.
So I would say averaging those two puts me around an 8 out of 10.
You're an 8 out of 10 today.
Well, the other thing is, though, I'm doing, and you know how you feel the same way about this.
Yeah.
All morning was yard work, like the spring cleanup.
Yeah.
Like leaves. And I was like, I'll just get it done before the podcast. And I got like halfway through or a third of the way through.
Raking leaves?
Yeah, raking leaves, which I just hate so much.
I cannot stand that.
Because there's no, you know, we talked about it before. You end and it's not, you didn't build anything. You didn't fix anything. You're just like, it's just this temporary, you just fix the leaf for now. More are going to fall.
More fall, more blow in there.
So I'd say,
whenever I see like that in a movie or even in real life, a chain gang where they're like doing some kind of raking, I'd rather be tied to a post and whipped or something and just get it over with. I don't know. Just give me 10 lashes so I don't have to be out here raking.
Exactly. Yeah. I think I'd take 10. If someone was like, I'll give you 10 lashes and rake your leaves, I'd be like, done. I don't know of anyone that does that. if there
is there any S&M landscapers out there, basically, you're saying?
Yeah, S&M. S&M, a landscaping.
That
business
would be
idea.
An unusual
business
bargain.
Idea out there.
Yeah.
S&M landscaping. But I also would say,
niche. Yeah.
But I would hesitate to hire someone. If someone's like, I will do your leaves for 10 lashes, I'd be like, I'm not sure I need to deal with you in general. I feel like that is objectively worth it,
but
I'm not sure.
Well, it depends what his Yelp reviews are like, you know?
Yeah, I'd look him up on Angie's List.
You know, how heavy a hand he is with those lashes.
Yeah, I'd be like, well, what do you mean by what sort of whipping?
So, we got a 2 in the jiu-jitsu. We got a much higher score in the health. Are there any other segments we're working?
I think that's about
that's
it.
That's all we're going to work with?
I think so.
And you come out to an 8.
Well, no, because I think 8 and then they all...
Oh, then the raking pulls it down to a 7.
I'd say 7.
Okay. Took us a while, but we got there.
Seven overall.
That's not bad if you did raking.
Well, I thought I'd talk through how I'm at the 7.
I appreciate that.
Because there's different ways. It just happened to land on 7.
Right. If it was another number, it would be another number.
Right. If the raking went better, I'd probably be at an 8.
If you skipped the raking or something. Yeah, somebody else rake.
All right.
Okay,
so
Dan, we got great jiu-jitsu stuff again.
Yeah, jiu-jitsu. I don't
like
want people to think that we're not talking about jiu-jitsu. Yeah, people.
Well, we talked about the jiu-jitsu pit of despair, which I think a lot of people will identify with that.
If nothing else, it's good for people to know that they're not alone.
Don't go on the jiu-jitsu walkabout. I mean, at least you do only do a 6-month walkabout. You know what happens? I don't think people appreciate my position, Dan. I am like the empty nested parent. I'm at the academy all the time, 7 days a week, more or less. And people come in, I become their teacher. I invest myself in helping them develop their game and I try to nurture them. And sometimes they go on walkabouts and don't come back. And
usually
I never hear from
them. I think usually they don't, right? Most people that are gone, I bet 90% of people that are gone for 6 months don't come back, right? I mean,
I don't. Some of them don't. Some come back, but some don't even ever talk to me again. They like don't answer my emails or my text messages or return a phone call. I mean, they're just like, boom, I'm like blacklisted. But I understand. I've had a lot of people who have never talked to me again for the rest of their life. I get on that list somehow. And I don't know what the
something
hell I'm
about
doing.
You in particular.
I don't know. I think I'm pretty inoffensive, but somehow I offend people to the point where they will never speak to me.
Well,
again.
That's a separate issue than the jiu-jitsu issue because
okay.
I get that people leave and they don't really want to explain it to you. Like they're sort of like, or they feel awkward and they're like, I don't really know how to explain to John that I just.
Right.
I used to say because I'd leave and I'd just be like, I'm in a bad mood about jiu-jitsu. I don't want to go.
Right.
And people would look at me like I had two heads because they'd be like, nobody ever says that. Like you, it's like part of the culture that you have to be like, jiu-jitsu is life. And the only reason I'm not doing it is because my injury, I have surgery.
Right.
I have a kid or, you know, something. I moved. And they're like, they feel like you're not allowed to say my head's in a bad place.
Yeah.
Or I just don't see the point. I lost track of the point. Like, so then.
But meanwhile, Dan, I'm all alone in my academy.
And you don't know what happened to people,
and
right?
The like, love is gone. Yeah. And they just never get back to me. Did I tell you the story? I had a guy when I was back in Dedham. So this is more than 10 years ago. This is probably right at the very beginning when I only had a handful of students. So this guy would come in and I had small classes. It was brand new academy. And I would roll with this guy every class that he that he came to. Maybe he came three times a week or something. I think his name was Bill. And Bill was married, I think. And then he bought a house like out in Acton. And he realized that the Mass BJJ in Acton was like right down the street from him and so much more convenient than coming to my gym. My gym was way out of the way for him.
That's when you were in Dedham.
Well, I was in Dedham. So he wanted to switch, which is totally reasonable. So he calls me. I answer my phone and he says, "Can you please put me in touch with the membership department or something like this?" I go, "Who's this?" And he says, "Bill." I go, "Bill, it's John." I'm like, "I'm the only one that works here." He wanted like the customer service department. And he was like, I was looking for a way to put my membership on hold or to cancel my membership. Can I speak to customer service?" I'm like, "What? No, it's me." Yeah, the guy you roll happening. With every time. The guy you... So I just thought it was funny. It was all family until he wanted to quit. And then I was this massive corporation where... You know,
yeah, I think I could see it that people don't really think of your point of view when they're quitting. You know what I mean? That you
right
care. Yeah. You're like a figurehead that, you know what I mean? They're not like, they don't think of you as a human.
I had a guy leave and he goes, and he sent me this long rambling Facebook message. This is really funny. It was like, I think there was some TV show where they go to a liquor store and they try to buy all this stuff. And the last thing is like a six pack in order to like. And they're underage, so they're trying to like get it by the guy, sneak it in with all this other stuff. So this guy sent me this long, rambling message with all this information. And at the very end, he's like, "Yeah, I won't be trading anymore."
And I'm not trading anymore. Bye. Yeah.
Bye. And I was like, "What?" So I call him up, and I was like, "What's going on?" And he explains it, whatever. And then he's like, "Oh, I didn't think you would take it so personally." And I'm like, "Oh, my business, my way of life, the way I feed myself, my avocation, my vocation. I wouldn't take any of this personally." You know, it's, I don't know. But they don't want you to take it personal when they're leaving. They want it to be personal when you're there.
Right.
But when they're leaving, then they want you to be a corporation. But
that's I can see it too, where like if I'm in the pit of despair and I'm like, well, if I say I'm leaving, I don't really want anyone to even try to talk me out of it. Or you know what I mean?
Right.
Like I don't want to have a conversation. I just.
Right. You don't want somebody to say, "Get out of the pit of despair.
Yeah,
get out
of there." Well, what you need to do is you need to blah, blah, blah. And you're like, "I don't even want to talk about any of it." It's probably like any pit of despair, not just jujitsu, right? Like you're just like, "I don't even want
to." Why is that, Dan? Why do people want to wallow in the pit of despair?
I don't know.
What is about that?
I don't know.
Why do people listen to sad songs or watch sad movies? What's going on with that?
They like it. They like that.
Like the feeling?
Well, I think people so like weird. Raw emotion. They like, no matter what the emotion is, they like emotion. Like there's I think, you know, you've anger, sorrow, happiness, whatever. Like I think there's just, but take all that away. There's raw emotion and people just like it. You know, they like, it's like, I bet if you had all these emotions, like 90% of it is the same bodily response. Like, you know what I mean?
They're both, I see what
you have
saying.
The same
kind
of
nervous system. Similar way.
And they just like. Huh. Getting that, they like firing up those nerves, you know, and so they just like. Also, the pit of despair specifically is like, it's it reduces anxiety. I think all emotions reduce anxiety.
Really,
I just saying that out of the blue, but like think about it for a second. I think if you're like, you know, jujitsu, you know, and you're like, well, so why am I bad at this? Why don't I have escapes? How do I get out of it? What's the strategy? The pit of despair is like, oh, who cares? Right, you know what I mean? Like it's like it releases a lot of tension. Right, you're like,
it creates
I suck.
An emotional detachment.
It's easy to just be like, I suck, and you know you don't have to fix it anymore. You're like, I'm not fixing it. Everything's miserable. Everything's dark. I can't fix it.
Right.
I can't deal with it.
There's an upside to quitting.
Screw it. I'm just out. Like I can't. And then it's like, so that's also why you don't want to have that conversation. Right. People are like.
He's going to make me do something.
Yeah,
and I don't want to do anything.
I don't want to do anything. Like, I, you know, it's like, I want this peace. the piece, yeah. And I bet this is way beyond jiu-jitsu. I bet there's a, like, it's
totally is.
Well, at the fundamental base of it, Dan, we move toward pleasure, away from pain, and we conserve energy. That's what our nature is. So what you're saying is when you go in the pit of despair, you're going to conserve all the future energy about getting better. Like, I don't even have to worry about this anymore. God, you know?
Right. Well, think of anything. Like, if other pits of despair, like about your job, you're like, should I do this job or this job? My boss hates me, this, and you're just like, oh, screw it. Like, I can't deal with it. Maybe quit. You know, you're like, I quit. And then it's like,
it takes a load off. It takes a burden away from you.
Now you can lose your house. Like, fine. I'll lose my house.
Tired of raking the leaves anyway.
Yes. It's all dark and gloomy and fine, so I lose the house.
It seems easy.
It's like, yeah, and you're, but now your spouse is criticizing you for being, you're like, who cares? I'm dark and, you know what I mean? Everything's gloomy. Right?
Yeah.
There's like peace to it.
There's a peace to it, right?
I always said anger also reduces anxiety, right? An example with my neighbor where it was like, they said, we're going to redo our fence. And where they told me they were going to redo the fence was like halfway across my lawn. Like, it was like,
they were encroaching on your property.
Yeah, like they weren't. It was
we decided to put a fence across your lawn.
Well, it was a fence that had been there for 40 years and it decayed away. And they're like, I think the real place for the fence is here. And it's like 20 feet over. I'm like, what?
Oddly that you randomly picked it in my direction instead of the other direction.
I was sort of like, you think, or, you know, they said, I think it's actually over more toward you. Like over by, and I was like, at first I'm like, fine. Fine, sure. You know, if that's where it belongs, that's where it belongs. But then they called me over and were like, well, there's this big rock in the way. And I'm like, wait, that rock is like way, way over, you know? And I'm like, why are we talking about the rock? How far over are you going to move this? And I was so tense because they're nice neighbors, like, and I got along. I was so, there's so much anxiety about it, you know, like, oh, I don't really want to deal with this. And then when they pushed it far enough and like the fence guy rang my doorbell and was like, hey, just so you know, my neighbor just asked me to put the fence up like way over on your property. like the actual installer rang my doorbell because he felt uncomfortable about it.
Yeah.
And I got angry. And then you're not uncomfortable at all. Like, all your anxiety is gone.
Simplified things.
Yeah. You're just like, wait a
minute. I'm right. You're wrong.
Screw
you.
Knock
it off.
I don't feel bad at all. Screw you.
Yeah.
I'm going out to confront you.
Mm.
I don't care if you're offended.
Right. So before you, it's not so much the anger took your emotion away, but you didn't have to weigh the costs and benefits of, like, if I say something, is it going to be come across wrong?
Right, right.
All of that stuff got resolved. You had a clear-cut answer to it.
Yeah.
They're wrong.
And
that's it. Screw this.
So I think a lot of people go to anger for some version of that reason. Where
I totally agree.
It simplifies everything.
I see with guilt all the time. Yeah. People don't want to feel guilty.
Right.
Instead of feeling guilty, they'll get pissed off. So they'll screw you over, then think of some reason to get mad at you. And then they don't have to feel guilty about screwing you over.
Right.
And they'll think that, or they'll pretend that you screwed them over. Yeah, I see that happen all the time.
Right. All right, so that was a tangent for something.
Okay. I don't know. But we have we asked some people in our Facebook group to give us suggestions.
Lots of good ideas.
There were no stupid questions.
Right. Although, you know what?
There are, I didn't want to go into this because I don't want to suppress.
I used to teach college classes.
Yeah.
You know, it happened all the time. I'd be like, anyone, feel free to raise your hand. There are no stupid questions. And then someone would raise their hand. I'd be like, oh, that was a stupid question. I just feel like, okay.
Yeah.
Or I wouldn't say that was stupid. I'd just be like, let me take back that idea about no stupid questions.
Let me fill in that a little
bit.
Yeah,
like, there are.
There's rarely stupid questions, but they do exist.
Yeah, what I mean to say is feel free to raise your hand. Your question might be, what I actually think the accurate thing is, there are plenty of stupid questions, but who cares?
We'll wade through some of your dumb questions, get to one that's worthwhile. That's basically what you're saying.
I actually think these questions were not stupid. And I also the other thing about it is, but before you even start, like, we're kind of selecting, like, people had put in ideas earlier.
Yep.
And I don't want people to think, like, overthink how we select them. It's kind of random, right? Like, I'm sure.
Pretty random.
I think they were pretty. There could be excellent questions from last post that we just forgot about.
Right. We'll try to get back to it.
So I don't want anyone to think, like, oh, you skipped mine because it was bad. It's like, you could have had the best one out there and we just sort of didn't look at it or didn't.
We're pretty idiotic. You know,
we looked at another one or we just, like, got sidetracked or whatever else.
Yeah.
So,
definitely.
You know, we could have picked a bad we could be picking the bad ones. You know, it's
I'm sort of just copying and pasting these. I could have done a bad cut and paste job or something.
You could literally glance down and we could talk about the one you see in front of you because of the way your paper's folded.
There you go. Definitely. All right.
Well, let's get to it.
Let's get to it. Top of the list. BJJ for law enforcement. Use of force, public perception versus reality. So they didn't really use the sentence format in this. It's kind of like...
Neither of us are law enforcement.
We're not law enforcement.
One thing I will say about public perception versus reality, doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu, it does help you interpret these cases out there sometimes where it'll be like... And they're so dicey publicly. They're so controversial.
Right.
That I'm like hesitating to get too specific, but there'll be like cases where I'd be like,
you're going
to
piss somebody off.
He was choking him to death. And you'll be like, he's not choking him to death. Like, like you're able to assess what's happening a lot better.
Yeah. You have better information.
Because I think a lot of people, too, like I'll say this and bear with me because nothing is controversial but about what I'm going to say, but about Rodney King, which is the original police beating that caused the LA riots and caused all this stuff. And people would say, how could you let those cops go like they were beating him? And I'm not even weighing in on that. I'm not weighing in on the verdict. But what I want to weigh in on is this, that I realized how most people interpret it. They saw a guy swing in the club and they're like, all those cops need to go to jail for they were all beating him. And what I realized was that there was a separation that no one understood. The jury actually had to look at each officer and be like, what was he doing? What was he doing? What was he doing?
Okay.
So sort of like, well, that officer, when you slow down the tape and you look at it and you take emotion out of it because you've seen it 50 times, be like, well, this guy was actually just, you know, restraining him in some way, or like, you know, this guy was doing his job. It, you know, he'll say, procedure is I got the legs, say. I'm making this, you know, the specifics up. It'll be like, and that's what he did. He grabbed his legs and crossed one leg over the other and held it, which is exactly what he was supposed to do. And what you realize is that, so you could see a jury going, well, that officer at least just did what he was supposed to do. You know, taking out what you think about the overall case and, you know, but the jury might say that guy didn't do anything, that one there. And you realize the public doesn't perceive it that way. They perceive broad strokes where they go, someone's swinging a club, all those guys were beating him. You know, the public doesn't get the check nuance, you know what I mean?
No.
So, like, there's other... Like,
well, here's the thing, too. If somebody... Here's what the public, by and large, I think, does not understand. If somebody does not want to be handcuffed, it's really hard to handcuff somebody if they don't want to be handcuffed.
Right.
So, there's a point sometimes where a police officer must have to say to somebody they're about to arrest, put your hands behind your back or whatever, I got to handcuff you. And if they say, no, I'm not going to let you... then it pretty much has to get physical.
Yeah, well, right? What is the other option? Leave them alone?
Fire a warning shot? I mean, it has to get physical. Right. And that's not an easy thing to do, to wrestle somebody down and pin them down and take your cuffs out and handcuff them. That's hard. You know, it's not easy. Yeah.
And a lot of the police officers have minimal training on how to do it. They have some training.
We have a lot of great guys, great law enforcement officers that train with us. And they have a lot of skills. So I'm sure they do better than most. But
that's not the average.
Probably not the average. Right. I don't know what the average is doing. I really don't.
I think most of the law enforcement people that train with us agree that there should be this training much more widespread.
I think in an ideal world, if they made it part of the job where, you know, you train three days a week and you get paid for it, really what they should do, I think it would help.
Right.
Yeah, help everybody.
I also think most people, so this public perception, I don't think people that train realize what most of the public or how a large segment of the public reacts to violence when they see it. They just get in like a panicky mode almost. Mm. So I'll give an example away from law enforcement, but my stepfather came over and I had the UFC on and he had never seen it. Like, again, you'd be surprised. 80-90% of people have never seen it. Probably 90% of people out there haven't ever seen it. You know, it was just sort of regular ground. Someone took someone down and was throwing punches on the ground. Mm-hmm. He almost had a heart attack. He was like, he's punching him on the ground. You know, like people have seen boxing, but they're not used to that. And they just had this visceral reaction where it's like, he's not even getting, like the guy's covering
up. You ever see those guys in Ireland, the pikey fighters, the travelers that get out there and fight? You cannot hit the guy on the ground. That is considered just terrible. And these guys are punching each other's faces in, and if they fall on the ground, they're like, stop it. And they drag it back up to their feet and then let them go at it again. There's some weird thing about that where people have.
And I think it's just what you're accustomed to. Like, I'm sure my stepfather would have, or father-in-law, whatever, would have not been shocked at like a violent boxing match. You know what I mean? Like, he's just accustomed to that.
We don't like kicking either.
Yeah.
Got to be punching.
Yeah, like, they're just not accustomed to it.
They've watched decades of John Wayne and Clint Eastwood punching guys. They never really kicked anybody.
Someone throws it. But that's so.
Imagine if John Wayne just hauled off and booted somebody in the balls. One of those cowboys. Like, what is this? That's un-American.
That's horrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so I think people have a panic, like at a basic level, when they see someone fighting on the ground. They're like, "What is this? It's barbaric.
It's barbaric. It's
horrifying." And even if no one's really getting hurt. So anyway, I think when law enforcement, anything goes to the ground and they're struggling and fighting, people just get in this blind, panicky mode where they're like, look, well, this is horrible. This is horrible.
Right.
And they're sort of not thinking like, well, what, like you were saying, like, well, what would you do? That's like one of my pet peeves, by the way, of people like, they're just like, this is horrible, but they don't really have a solution or like, what would you do or how would you solve this? You know,
that's a little frustrating. I think it doesn't work this way, but, you know, if you weren't happy with the way the fire department worked, you would say, we need better training and better equipment. We got to invest some money into this department to make it better. It doesn't seem to work that way with law enforcement for some reason. It gets almost tribal. It's a us against them kind of mentality. So it's like, why are we going to give them more money if they're doing this stuff to us? So,
and it's a weird thing. And then you have now, this is the first era of social media sort of, you know, and the echo chamber where, you know, if you're someone that clicks on police brutality things, you're going to be fed it all day and you're going to think it's constant.
I bet it gets a lot of clicks.
And people don't really look at numbers and statistics and they're just like, oh, it's just rampant. You know, like you see any video now of someone getting arrested, read the comments and they're like, oh, you know, it's just routine for them. Police to beat them up.
Well, there is an upside that everyone has video on their phone now because you can capture what's happening. You know,
yeah, but they're only that's good, but they're only going to show. You know,
you're not going to
see online all the peaceful,
but
resolutions. You know,
right. And it would be tough. I don't know if somebody was videotaping me all the time doing my job. That's an extra pressure on me, but maybe it has to happen. I don't know. But
to your point about, I think what happens is someone has a minor crime, but it's enough for them to be brought in. And then they say, I'm not coming. And then,
so then you
have to get forceful, but then they go back to the nature of the crime. So it's like, can you believe they tased him and choked him for this minor crime? And it's like, yeah, but it's not the minor crime that they're tasing. It's because he wouldn't come in. Like,
right.
So, and then, like you said, it reaches a point where if they say, I'm not coming, it's like, do you physically make him or do you leave him alone? Like, should the police be like, you said no, so okay.
Okay.
Like, we'll only take in the people
That's not a good precedent.
We'll
probably
only take the people in that agree. You know, like the
get all the agreeable criminals off the street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like you have to, and like you
gotta.
And then it's smarter thing is to have 3-4 people get on them. Like, it's not that you don't want to have a one-on-one John Wayne mano-a-mano fight. So it's sort of like, then it looks visually, though, then people get that shock visual, like, look, 4 guys jumping on one person. And
right. It doesn't look great, unfortunately. But it's like you said, it really has to go down that way. I mean, you can see a parent in a grocery store with a 4-year-old that is pitching a fit and doesn't want to comply. It's hard to get a 4-year-old to do anything. To handcuff a 4-year-old. Yeah. I don't know why you're handcuffing 4-year-olds, but so an adult that doesn't want to get handcuffed, that's a lot. You're asking a lot of people to do that and to do it safely. It's tricky. Yeah. And jiu-jitsu helps. All the guys that train with us tell us it just makes them that much better. I mean, you're literally, when you're training Brazilian jiu-jitsu, learning how to control a resisting person, somebody who's resisting live. Without strikes. So it just seems like it's probably the perfect sport in martial art if you're in law enforcement.
And we've said before, it makes everything safer because if you don't know how to defend yourself and don't know how to grapple someone down, you have to go to something else. You have to go to a taser or a gun. I would imagine, too,
if you weren't confident in your physical skills, you'd more likely have a stress response. So you're probably going to be more likely to be overexcited. Yeah. That's not going to be good.
Yeah.
If you're very confident that you can handle yourself, you may be able to stay calm, and you might even diffuse the situation before it even happens because you're calm enough. But yeah, I mean, it's a tough job for sure. And I help out. Sometimes I've been over to the police academy and volunteered my time over there a little bit. It's great guys over there. And all the guys that train with us that are in law enforcement they're all good guys, too.
Yeah,
they're really good
everyone,
people.
Yeah.
I'm so happy that they're out there keeping us safe, because I think jiu-jitsu has that thing where it keeps you sort of humble, because when you start, you're sort of at the bottom. You know what I mean? You're a little bit the nail, and you can't be the hammer until you develop some skills.
Yeah,
right?
I always said that's a great filter, that you just can't come in and win. You can't come in and take a beating. It's impossible.
Yeah.
Like a great, strong athlete, like, still is going to take a beating for a while. So if you have such a bad, big ego that you can't take that,
or fragile ego, maybe you can't take it, then you're probably not going to be able to do jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
But
I remember there'd be back in the day, like, you know, not recently, 12 years ago, there'd be fighters that would say, I've never been tapped even in the gym. And it would always be like, what kind of gym do you go? That's impossible. You know, it'd be like it. So you must not really have a real gym or not have real training. You know, there's no one that says that anymore.
We had that guy. He said he was training someplace and nobody had ever tapped him there. And then he came to one of our classes and everybody tapped him.
I remember
pretty much.
Like everyone in the whole room. I remember that. Yeah. That was back in Dedham, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that brutal noontime class. And it was like, you're not okay, let's go see no one.
Okay,
see, not get tapped in here.
But he said, he goes, wow, I've never been tapped, and I got just tapped by everybody here. Like, he wasn't delusional. Yeah, so maybe he wasn't tapped where
good.
He was.
Yeah.
All right, should we move to the next one?
Yes.
Okay, the next one is recurring injuries. I don't know what he's if he wants us to tell him how to have recurring injuries or how to prevent them.
How to deal with them.
I don't know.
I'd say descend into the pit of despair over it.
Definitely.
That's what I'm doing.
Go on a walkabout. Jiu-jitsu walkabout. Get back to, I mean, I think a lot of injuries occur because people get overly excited and they use too much strength. If they just really focus on the technique, they would probably keep themselves safer and, like, try not to win every sparring session. And if you do that positional training that we were talking about last week, you limit the variables, so you're less likely to get hurt. Most of the injuries occur during takedowns, either getting taken down or taking somebody down. And they usually occur because people are doing the takedowns wrong. And so I try to stress to everybody to learn your takedowns and know how to do them properly and don't freelance. You know what I mean? People get – it's usually newer students and guys just kind of – they start John Wayne and they just grab somebody by the lapels and try to fling them across the room without any real technique. That's how people can really get hurt.
Right.
Or they sag. They get a body lock. This is the one that somebody almost blew my knee out once. Oh, my God. And I see it in the gym. I just stop everything. They get a body lock or waist lock, and they just kind of sag their hips on the side of their partner's knees to just try to use their body weight to drag them down. Terrible technique. Doesn't really work, but you can blow somebody's knee out. So avoid those things. Those are the biggies, you know.
Yeah, and like the day in, day out of like a frantic attempt to win every sparring session, sooner or later you'll get hurt.
Yeah, and if you're practicing good jiu-jitsu, you know, you keep when you're on the bottom, you're more or less keeping a shape of a ball all the time. Your arms are in, your legs are up a little bit. You're just almost in a fetal-like position. You're just keeping yourself safer. When you stretch yourself out, everything gets more vulnerable. But that's bad jiu-jitsu. You know, your limbs are more available to be
And tapping, right? Someone's starting to armbar you or kimura you and
choke you, Dan.
Yeah.
Unchokeable Dan Robin.
I'm tapping a lot more to these things just because instead of that last second escape, it's like, let's just tap and avoid hurting yourself.
Yeah. Okay. The next one is from our old friend, Joshua Larson. Missed this guy. He went out to Utah. Great guy. Helicopter pilot. So he asks about solo drills. I don't really like solo drills, Dan.
having never done them, maybe you want to handle this.
I don't really do them. I think it just
Didn't you say you used to grab a gi and strengthen your grip by doing
I still
chokes.
Do that. Yeah. Oh, I used to choke a log with the gi, and I would do sort of like 10-second isometric squeezes at about 100%. And I found that that increased my grip strength and my choking ability pretty dramatically after about a month.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. I think what happens is you just train your body to recruit more motor neurons. So you don't even build more muscle in your hands. You just get them way more strong and effective. I found that. And you know what? I advise everybody to do it.
Has anybody ever
done it? Nobody does it. Yeah.
I never did it.
It's so maddening as a coach and a teacher. Like you're choking somebody and they're like, wow, your chokes are so strong. So your grip is so powerful. What do you do? Here's exactly what I do. It takes 5 minutes. They go, oh, cool. And then walk away.
Just curious.
Yeah, just curious. So I do a lot of that. I don't know if this is a solo drill. I think just the warm-ups that I do, I don't know if you've taken one of my classes, just shoulder rolls, those things. You want to be able to move on the mat properly. But you really develop that doing jiu-jitsu, but you could do that by yourself. Otherwise, I don't do too many solo drills. What else do I do? And people ask about conditioning too, strength and conditioning. So this is sort of the same thing. Nobody follows up. Somebody will ask me about conditioning for jiu-jitsu. I think it's on here too, further down, how to get in shape for it. The best thing I found, other than actually training, is I would invest 4 minutes at the end of class, after the class was over, everybody left. Nobody wanted to roll with me anymore. And I would do Tabata burpees. Do you know what Tabata protocol is? I believe it was a Japanese scientist named Tabata. And it's essentially you work for 20 seconds, you rest for 10 seconds. Okay? And if you do 8 rounds of that, that's 4 minutes. It only takes 4 minutes. So I would do my version of a burpee. So basically, I would sprawl, so I just almost like throw myself on the ground, do like some kind of push-up, not a real, like really not strict, get to my feet and do a little hop when I got to my feet. So the idea wasn't to have great technique, it was to do it as fast as possible.
For 20 seconds.
For 20 seconds. Take 10 seconds off, do 8 rounds of that. That to me simulated a very competitive jiu-jitsu match more than anything. And that, I mean, it's so hard. It's 4 minutes of suck, big time. But it's 4 minutes, and it'll improve your conditioning. I don't know how many people I've told that about, and the same thing. They'll come up to me, and they'll ask me, what can I do? They'll say, John, what can I do to improve my conditioning for jiu-jitsu? Is there anything that I could do?
That's a specific answer.
And I go, here's what you need to do. And they go, hmm.
Yeah,
and I go, you know what? I'll do them right now with you. They'll go, and they don't do them. It's infuriating. Infuriating. The other thing I would do, Dan, now that on the subject of stuff that I found over my 20 years of training that works marvelously, works amazingly well, that people refuse to do, is sometimes you tweak a finger, right?
Mm-hmm.
A knuckle in your finger doesn't feel good. And what I found is you can't do those grippers if something's wrong with your finger. It actually makes it worse. But what does help is I would just take a plate, like a 10-pound plate with my fingers stretched out so it's flat in my hand, and I hold the other side with my thumb, and I just do curls for like 15 or 30 reps or something like this. So I'm stressing the fingers when they're fully extended. That was the best thing to help my fingers and make them get better if they were a little tweaked, to make them feel stronger, prevent injury. And I built up – I haven't done them in years though, but – I could do a 45-pound plate.
You're not doing it, though.
Even I'm not doing them. Yeah. But I'm not going up to myself asking me for advice, you know. But that's another one. Well, nobody 45
does. 45-pound plate. That's, yeah.
I got up there. I got pretty strong with them. I'm sure I could not do it now. But my fingers were bulletproof from doing those. And it's another thing that takes so little time. I mean, how long does it take to just do a couple sets of that? Another five-minute thing.
Yeah.
Which, that's what I like to do. I want to invest my time in the jiu-jitsu. A little time in
the overall
stuff.
Thing. I think we all know the best thing to do is to be on the mat. Like if you want to get good at jiu-jitsu, do jiu-jitsu.
Here's the other thing. I've never met a person who wasn't strong enough to do jiu-jitsu. They go, how can I get stronger from my jiu-jitsu? And meanwhile, their jiu-jitsu is awful. I'm like, never mind getting stronger. Just get better at jiu-jitsu. Yeah, there's some people that aren't strong at all, but they have really good jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. Yeah, but I get it, too, when you go with a monstrously strong person. You're like, man, that's a big advantage they have. They're so much stronger than me.
But to any new student, if you have an hour to invest, and you can invest it either in jiu-jitsu or some kind of strength and conditioning, you got to put it in the jiu-jitsu.
Right.
Doesn't make sense to do anything right. else.
I do think there's people that are maxed out. They're like not brand new.
Right.
You know, say a blue belt that's like, I do as much jiu-jitsu as I want to do.
Yeah, and then you can do a little bit. What I should do, Dan, I run once a week. I probably should do that Maffetone slow running maybe twice a week where you do 180 minus your age and keep your heart rate at that range for, you know, 30 to 90 minutes or something. I should probably do that twice a week just for heart health and cardiovascular right. health. And then I do a little shoulder mobility, hip mobility, a little strength training. I do pistol squats for my legs once a week or something and some stuff for my shoulders and my upper back. Stay away from getting that.
I hear swimming's good.
Yeah.
That's what I hear. I don't do it.
I don't do it either. Next year, Dan, after this year, I'm getting with Craig Lewin and I'm going
to
become...
Learning to swim?
I'm going
to
learn how to swim, become a long distance ocean swimmer.
You can actually try to do one of those?
Hell yeah. Yeah.
You think you'll actually ever be dropped in the ocean? And
you think I'll ever need it, you mean?
No, you think you'll do it.
Oh, yeah. Why not? Yeah.
I still think I don't want to be eaten by a shark.
I definitely don't want that. Yeah.
I know that's irrational, but I think dropped in midnight,
oh, right.
20 miles out to sea, I don't know. That freaks me out still. It's irrational, and I'm the most rational person out there. But
no, that's totally rational.
Yeah, but I think the odds are small, though. Like the odds are small. Like
probably you got a boat there right by you, right?
I would just want people swimming all around me.
Right.
So then like one of them goes down, you can be like, all right, pick me up.
Get out of here. Let's get out of here. Yeah.
You know, that would help. But like by yourself, you know?
So if you were like in a herd of animals, you'd be the guy in the middle.
Yeah.
You're like.
Well, even when I go to the beach, that's what I do. Like just from the shore. Like,
I don't want an aisle seat. Or you do want an aisle seat.
I want an aisle seat to get out of a theater. But in the ocean, I just want like all like especially tasty.
Oh, I see what you do.
Tasty, plump looking people on all sides of me. I'm like, look, the shark's going to go for that guy. Look at him.
Definitely.
I like them all sides. I'm like, the shark moseys in. They're going to grab one of them. I have time to get out.
All right, Dan.
Yeah.
So we covered about three of our long list of
things.
Wait,
are we out of time?
I think we're out of time. Yeah. Dimitri's giving us that sign.
Well, we can use the same list.
Yeah, next week. We'll come back.
So you don't have to ask for more ideas.
We get a lot of good ideas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. I think we covered some good stuff. We
talked about these ideas next time.
Next time. All right, Dan, thank you. Another brilliant podcast. And thank you, folks, for listening. Please hit the like button. Dan was so upset last week. I think we got 7 likes or something pathetic.
Shaken.
Yeah, it's awful. And please share it. And everyone that does support us, we really appreciate it. We're going to make patches for everybody that supports us. All right. Talk to you next week.